You are listening to the Epic Fantasy Podcast, Lion's Last Kill. And this is Chapter 14. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast. And if you like Epic Fantasy and fantasy kind of stuff, you can check things out at my websites, www.epic-fantasy.com. That's Epic Fantasy with a dash between the words. Or www.stormthecastle.com or www.castlefiction.com. Once again, thanks for tuning in, and this is Chapter 14. The second day on the mountain started in a somber mood. It was a mood generated by the future and not the past. The day behind them was behind them, and all their thoughts went to the day in front of them. They made quick business of packing up their tents and sleeping bags and preparing themselves for that day ahead. They repacked their packs so their cold weather clothing was at the top and easy to reach. They would be needing it today. While most of them inspected the climbing tools, Bosch went over to the gate and placed his hand on it. It was slightly warm, and he wondered if he placed a cricket on it if it would tell him the temperature. He smiled at this. If this were one of the tips of a Skrinsculpt, it would be a very big breakthrough. Skrinsculpts were always homogeneous masses that didn't vary from the shape of a sphere or an egg. They didn't have parts that protruded very far from their surface. It was possible that these gates were protrusions from the sculpture that lay inside the mountain. He made a note to talk to the master of the Skin Guild about this. He imagined the master's eyes light up with a revelation, and imagined that he would mount an expedition to come and take a look for himself. The master of the Skrin Guild wasn't a young man, but he would be able to make this one-day climb up as far as one of the gates. Within a half hour, the camp was broken, and with their packs saddled firmly on their backs, they began the second day of climbing. Bosch's legs were stiff, but not sore. He had adjusted well to the ascent so far. Physically, the climb should not be an issue for him. The climbing up to this point was direct. From the gateway forward, they would not head straight for the summit. They would wind their way back and forth along the sides of the mountain. This was why their progress would be slowed. They would cover close to the same amount of distance as far as walking went, but it was a slow looping back and forth, ever turning slowly toward the top. This path had been climbed before, and it was reasonably well mapped out, but over time the side of the mountain changed with the weather and with slides, so the maps were only guides. By mid-morning they had broken out their ropes and used their pitons to navigate over some difficult spots. They didn't talk to each other all morning. They focused all their energy on making good progress and watching their footing. They were walking along a ledge outcropping when Bosch heard a voice.
This is base camp.
He stopped walking and focused
Commander
his attention.
Can you hear me? Commander Varga, come in.
The voice got louder and more urgent, and he traced it back to Varga, who was walking in front of him. Varga kept walking, and Bosch resumed his walking at a faster pace. He caught up with Varga and the voice. It was coming from the speakstone in Varga's pack.
Commander Varga, this is base camp.
He put his hand on Varga's shoulder to get his attention, and Varga turned with a startled expression. He had either been in deep thought, or he was battling the subtle power of the Oracle. The Speakstone! They're trying to contact us! This was a breach of protocol, so it must be important. It wasn't safe for a base camp to contact the climbers at unanticipated intervals. They could be in the middle of a treacherous part of the climb, and wouldn't be able to respond. It was also unwise to interrupt a climb unexpectedly. Concentration was important during a climb, and the mountain and the weather were enough to handle. An unexpected call could prove dangerous, so this must be important. Varga wrestled off his pack quickly and dug out the speakstone. It was towards the bottom, of course. Heavy items were better carried towards the bottom. It kept your center of gravity near your hips. The six climbers gathered around while he put his hands on the stone.
This is Commander Varga.
The lieutenant from base camp responded with concern in his voice. It sounded like he was starting to lose his military discipline. Bosch wondered whether he could hold up much longer under the influence of the mountain and the Oracle.
Commander, we had a skirmish with the Breck scouting party. We killed them, three of them, and we lost one man. There was some kind of an advanced scouting party, very lightly armed and equipped for fast movement. They came all the way to the mountain, and we took them by surprise. We just rode them down on horseback. We would have preferred to remain in hiding, but they were getting uncomfortably close, and it looked like our camp was their destination. The spot is probably known to them, and if there are more coming, they may be heading for here.
Varga paused for just a moment to consider the situation. Then he replied, "Okay, break camp and get out of there. Head for the base of the south path. Your orders from here will be movement and evasion. Try to stay out of sight of them. If need be, stay in touch with us and move all the way around the mountain to the east path. We can always come down that path and meet up with you. And we're going to check in twice a day now. Along with every evening, we will also check in every morning." Bosch gulped at this. The east path was a treacherous one. But at least it wasn't the north path. Nobody had attempted the north path for at least 100 years. It was the coldest face of the mountain, and it was the sheerest. Traveling down that face could be extremely fast. Terminal velocity fast. The situation was becoming close to dire now, and the urgency of the trip was doubled. The soldiers in the base camp could hold their own in a reasonable skirmish, but they were sitting ducks. Their mission was to wait for the climbers to return, and if a large group of Vrek got sight of them, they would be chased all the way around the mountain. Eventually, lack of sleep or fatigue would slow them down, and they would have to turn and fight. The base camp party was traveling heavily, but there weren't many options for them when it came to food and water and grazing the horses. Their strength would dwindle. It could turn into an open terrain siege because they were pinned to the mountain. Bosch figured that Varga would dispatch them back to the castle if he had to, and that would leave them to try to descend from the mountain and make it back by pure stealth. Varga repacked and reshouldered his pack, and the group head back on their trek without a word to each other. Toward late afternoon, they made a lot of progress, and the change in weather was a good indicator of this. It had gotten bitterly cold, and they had stopped at one point to don warmer clothes and put on their fur-lined overboots. The ground and the rocks were covered in a thin layer of frost, and they had resorted to using their handpicks to help maintain a good hold on the mountain. Their progress was much slower now, and they had to take Hawk one step at a time. Many times during the afternoon they had sought pitons to help them keep a hold on the sheer cliffs that they walked along, over, under, and between. By nightfall, the temperature had dropped to below freezing, and the winds were howling. They erected the tents in a tight circle under a rock outcropping that afforded them some protection from the wind. The tents were fabricated so they could assemble together with fastening hooks and loops, so they could either be erected as single tents, or several could be put together into a larger tent. The latter is what they did, and after they had all squeezed inside, they broke out their sleeping bags and their screen heaters. And while they ate, Varga tried to contact the base camp with his beakstone. He tried at least 12 times, and they were starting to worry about the lack of an answer. "Come in, base camp. This is Commander Varga," was what he kept patiently repeating. It was possible they were on the move and couldn't use the stone. It might take some time before they could find a safe spot and respond. Varga was just about to give up and try again later when a voice responded over the stone.
"Strange rock, speak human tongue."
They were all jolted by the sound of the voice coming from the speak stone. It was the unmistakable slurred speech of a Brek. Bosch pictured its pasty, gray-skinned hands rubbing the speakstone. It was commonly known that the Brek called Skrinstones strange rocks. Varga didn't respond, but the Brek continued.
"You need talk to your human friends?"
It made an uncomfortable gurgling sound between sentences, a sound that could have been laughing, but Bosch wasn't sure.
"They all dead!"
It paused and gurgled some more, then talked louder into the stone.
"They's all dead. You's come to help? Comes down from Mount Badly and helps humans' friends?"
The Brek worked itself up into a frenzy, maybe because they wouldn't answer it, and it started talking in its own tongue, and Varga lifted the flap on the tent and carried the stone outside. When he carried it far enough out into the wind so they couldn't hear it anymore, he returned to the tent. "It looks like we're on our own." They all grimaced at this. There were 12 well-trained soldiers down there, and they had been probably obliterated. From here on out, it would become a game of cat and mouse. Varga continued. They were heading toward the south path, so we have to assume that that is not a good option for our return. We continue our mission, and as far as it stands right now, we should probably descend down the east path. This will add several days to our journey back home, but so be it. In silence, they ate the remainder of their day's meal and settled in to get some sleep in the cold air. Bosch was standing on a cold, rocky outcropping somewhere on the mountain. It looked cold, but it didn't feel cold. The wind whipped all around him, but it didn't bite like it should. Instead, it carried a milky haze of snow around him in swirls. He could only see a few feet in each direction, and he craned his neck to make sense of it. A rustling noise to his left came to him clearly through the whipping of the wind, and he turned to watch a snake slowly slither toward him. He watched in horror as it wound its way around, in slow, undulating curves, straight toward him. Its back was gray with green diamonds, but its face was hidden. Its eyes, nose, and mouth were there, but he couldn't see them. It was shrouded in a fog. It was as if it were a picture that was out of focus. He could see the rest of the snake clearly, but he couldn't see the face. It slithered closer and sprung. As it bit his thigh, he woke. In a panic, he threw the sleeping bag off himself and inspected his thigh. It was fine. No sign of a bite. Damn! If the Oracle wasn't taunting him, he thought. Then he reconsidered. Was she taunting him, or was she trying to tell him something? He thought about the language of the Oracle. Why did everything have to have its own language? The Breck, the humans, the crickets, the sparrows, the Oracle, and even the snake. They all had their own language. Why couldn't there be a universal language that they all spoke and understood? He mulled this around while in his half-reverie between the world of sleep and the waking world. Maybe there was a language that they all spoke. He smiled at this, and brought up a vision of the machine in his workroom gently spinning and humming, trying to speak to the crickets, the sparrows, and the people. This is the end of Chapter 14. Stay tuned next week for Chapter 15, Day 3, as we get closer to the top of the mountain and the Oracle. Thanks for listening.